Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about the Ghostwriter House with Brian Bateman. On your Instagram page, which is how I came across you, you have some video that's really compelling of these orbs. And there's a couple videos where these orbs are pretty fantastic and like very bright. And there's one that almost comes directly to the camera. Like you can see the perspective of it coming across the room because it gets larger as it comes closer to the camera.
Yeah. You know, I always kind of hesitate posting those because apparently, so I didn't know this, but apparently in the paranormal world, the whole orb thing is a big, like people say it's dust or a bug.
And I think it can be 100%. I think it can.
It definitely can be because I know when there's dust and I know when there's bugs. So my cats will come in here and we actually put their litter box in here now. And so when they, you know, do the litter box, it, you know, there's dust everywhere. So you see all these particles going everywhere, but when they're not in here and then you get like a lone, you know, thing, you know, this only one all night.
It's like, the video that one of them that I watched, it's like this perfectly round orb comes across the room and gets close enough to the camera that I think if it was a bug, the shape would have changed. The
shape changes, right. Yeah. I have actual video of bugs in this room and you can totally tell. Like it's the pattern of the way they fly. And then, like you said, you'll make out the body a lot of the times, you know, and stuff like, so yeah, you know, so I throw them up there anyway, and I just let the people that look at it hash it out. You can say
make your own mind up.
Yeah, let them make their own mind up. I'm not posting it to just try to, you know, say this is definitely a ghost. I'm just trying to post it because if it's interesting to me, it might be interesting to somebody else. I literally could post a ton more of like the dust videos of my cat's thing, and it looks crazy, but it's not. It's, I know what it is, so I'm not going to post it and try to act like it's something it's not. So,
because I have taken pictures where I know that is dust or bugs. Like, it looks like my friend has 100 orbs around him, but I also know it was a really dusty, dirty kind of cellar that we were in. Mm-hmm. It was a ghost tour we were doing. So there's lots of people in and out of there. So it kind of stirred everything up. But I've taken other pictures at where a building my sister owns with the most brilliant white circular orb or blue orb, or it's way different. It's very different.
And I actually, my mother-in-law and father-in-law, interestingly enough, actually saw an orb in person. This was years and years ago. They actually ended up calling the police. It was like this ball of energy that was just like, just floating outside by one of the neighbor's houses.
What the heck? Yeah.
And they ended up calling the police, and the police came out and saw it. And yeah, then it ended up just disappearing. They couldn't figure out what it was. And so, you know, it's just like, but you know, it seemed like it was producing its own, you know, it wasn't, you know, something else. It was like producing its own energy. You know what I mean?
I'm always like, is that paranormal? Is it alien? Is there some,
I don't know. Yeah.
Because I wonder about stuff.
But see, the thing too that's interesting to me with the orb stuff is because, like, I also know the history of this home. So, you know, and I've had other experiences in this home that just tell you that there's something going on here, you know. So when I see those orbs, I'm like, well, maybe that is something from something that's going on here. So again, I'll post it up there and, you know, y'all can just take a look at it and figure it out for yourself and decide, you know. But yeah, there are definitely some interesting ones that I put up there. I try to, again, put the ones that I find a little bit more interesting than just the ones I see. You know, I've literally have hundreds and hundreds of those videos. So I don't, like I said, if I know it's not something weird, I won't post it. It's not worth it.
There is a book called Ghostwriter.
Yes.
And Jennifer Raisington Crowley wrote the book, and it is based on your house.
Yes.
Tell me how that came about.
All right. So after moving into this house and experiencing all this stuff and then finding out about the people who lived and died here and all that thing stuff, when I was doing the investigating on the house, I came across a lot of other interesting stuff. I joined newspapers.com. I joined ancestry.com. That way I had access to all the archives, and I went, you know, just would type in my address or just my street name, and then I'd look at all the articles that popped up over the years. And one of those articles was in 2000 in no not not 2000 two, 1998. Sorry, I'm thinking of Nextdoor. There was a suicide Nextdoor in 2017. I'll tell you about 1998. Two doors down, an 18-year-old was living with his father at his grandmother's house. And apparently grandma ended up kicking him out for some reason. I think he was doing drugs or whatever. Well, he didn't take too kindly to that and ended up killing his grandmother with his bare hands.
Oh, my God.
The police, when they investigated his, and they went into his room, found a bunch of satanic drawings and symbols. They didn't necessarily know if it was connected to that. They thought it was just that he was stealing money and wanted to do drugs, and she cut him off and kicked him out, and so he killed her. So, but interestingly enough, they did find some satanic symbols. And I did find out that from a neighbor that there was a former really dark satanic history in this neighborhood of satanic worship back in the late 90s, probably early 2000s. This neighborhood is definitely a transitional neighborhood. I mean, it's coming back to what it once was. But it, you know, after I think it was like the 80s, things started kind of going downhill, people moving out, you know, drugs moving in, gangs moving in, just a lot of crime, a lot of violence. Just, I mean, it was pretty bad. But now it's, even though we've had some tragedies, it's not like, you know, scary living here or anything like that. It's just, you know, we live in a city. You know, I live in Fort Worth. I'm 2 miles from downtown. So, you know, it's definitely an urban area, but it's, you know, it's just, we love it because this, the history is, just, it's amazing. So, but yeah, so finding out about that was definitely unsettling, knowing that it was two doors down, but it happened in 1998. So whatever. But then I found out a year after that in 1999, a couple houses down from that house and across the street, there was a double unsolved murder of a couple that were in their upper 60s. Person broke into the back of the house, the back door, bludgeoned them both to death. And that crime is still unsolved. And then in 2020, on the next block down, this is the house, you know, we're talking about when I take my dog for a walk in the neighborhood. This was one of the houses that we don't like to walk by. This is the house that gives me the goosebumps and the hair on my neck stands up every time I go by it for some reason. I know the reason, but I do feel like a really sad, just dark energy when I walk by that house, and it just, I'm like, ugh. So I try not to walk by that house, but in 2020, a lady killed her 4-year-old daughter. She took a knife and she slit her throat. She said the reason she did it was because somebody told her that if she didn't do it, something worse was going to happen to her daughter. So she put her in a trash can and then called 911 and said her daughter was missing. Well, when the police got there, she didn't even try to hide anything. She just went ahead and admitted it, showed her where the body was. And now I think she's in prison for 50 years. You know, she obviously had mental issues. And to me, it sounded like one of those things where the girl should have never been in the home, you know, and just slipped through the cracks and unfortunately was killed. So, but that was in 2020. So that was not that long ago. You know, you can still find news stories on that, you know, on the, if you just look up the on the internet. So, and my neighbors told us about that too, because they lived here when that happened. So
that's a lot of dark things that have happened within a couple blocks of your house.
Yeah. Yeah. Also an explosion and a fire, a couple houses down from me, in 1923, destroyed and damaged several houses. Luckily not mine. Mine wasn't included in that, but it was pretty close to where it happened. But yeah, so the suicide next door. So in 2017, there was a gentleman named Sam, and Sam was friends with Walt. I think he was probably in his 60s, if I would have had to guess. I guess Sam had lived there with his wife from like 1998 until his death in 2017. But the day Sam died was actually July 28th. I found that out just a couple of weeks ago. His wife had posted something about his death. So I ended up asking her when she moved in to the house after she posted that about his death. And she said 1998. And then they got married in like, I think 1999 or something like that, or 1988. I'm sorry. I think they got married in like 89 or 90. So when I contacted her to ask her that, she said, yeah, Sam died July 28th, 2017. And it was like July 25th when I contacted her. So like, it's like when I contacted her back, like I didn't know the day he passed away. So it was just like, you know, it was weird that I contacted her so close to when he passed away. So I did know. Now I know he passed away on July 28th, but he went to the backyard and just shot himself in the head. Yeah. And she found him.
Oh.
Yeah. She will
not.
I
can't imagine.
The reason I know her is from Facebook. We actually have a ghost group for the neighborhood that I found. So I started posting all the stuff I was, experiencing, and people started taking interest because there are other people that have haunted houses in this neighborhood. It's not just mine. So actually the house that that Julie lives at is haunted. She was telling me about it.
It's not surprising, really.
Yeah, no. But yeah, so when I talk to her, like, she won't come over to this part of the neighborhood anymore. She lives a couple streets over with her friend who's also a little older, and she's still very traumatized by it, even though it happened, in 2017, several years ago now. But still, I can't even imagine like what that would do to you to have to see something like that. And just that and again, we're talking about energy. Just there's so much energy that seems like that's just around this whole street, not just the street, this neighborhood. I found out about several other murders in the neighborhood, murder suicides, murders, fires, gang crime. and then of course the satanic worship that we found out about. I haven't even scratched the surface, honestly. I just keep finding out all about all this stuff that had happened in this neighborhood in the past. And it's just like, it's almost like it's cursed. So
yeah.
In the book, that's how we kind of start out the book. We started out basically like the land's cursed. There is Comanche Indian history here as well. So Comanches this was their territory. When we talk about maybe curses, they're always talking about the Indians and mad that you took their land and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, maybe there's something to that. Maybe there's not, but yeah, there's
and it's not just taking their land. They frequently did that through basically slaughtering the Native Americans.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was pretty horrific.
You could understand if somebody came in your backyard and said, "Hey, I'm going to survey this backyard and build a house on it.
And I'm taking it from you."
Yeah, exactly. So,
and you're going to go live over there now.
Yeah.
We're
going to put you over here now. And there you go. So,
it's horrific.
I can understand that the there would be something that they could do to try to curse
something. And the thing about Native American culture is that it is very much about the land and the energy from the land and
nature,
Mother Nature.
And
of it, the power of it.
Which questions me back to the elemental thing in the house. So I don't know if that's somehow connected to Native American thing. I have a group supposedly coming out in the future who's going to bring a Native American with them to kind of go and investigate that kind of side of things. Because I have no idea what I'm doing with any of that stuff. I'll let them just take over because they've done this before. So, but I'm again looking forward to kind of learning more about that kind of stuff. And I bought a book about the last Comanche chief, Quanah Parker. Quanah Parker actually has big history here in Fort Worth, if you know anything about the Comanches. But there is a lot, of that history here too. And so the settlers used to come in. So the Texas Rangers actually were created because when they told people to go settle land, they said, "It's free, you can take it. We'll go survey it and then you have to just settle on it." So the surveyors would go out and they would get attacked from the Comanche. So a lot of them were just getting killed. So the Texas Rangers were formed to protect the surveyors from the Comanche. And then they actually then started protecting the settlers from the Comanche. So that's kind of how the Texas Rangers kind of came about, actually, was for the whole Indian history, which I never knew that before. I thought it was pretty interesting.
With Jennifer, did you know her? And you're like, "Hey, I've got this house. This weird stuff's happening." And then did you decide to write a book together?
So
how did that come about?
Originally, I felt compelled to do something with all this information. That's where I feel the Harold connection in this, because I feel like he's actually kind of guiding this kind of thing. And that's why I'm talking to you right now, because I want to tell everybody about Harold Monroe. And I want to talk to you about the book and all that kind of stuff. And so Jen, I knew from a job in the early 90s I had in Cincinnati. I actually was friends with her brother before that. Her brother was a musician in Cincinnati, and I'm still friends with him to this day, actually. And so I knew of Jen writing over the years from him. I didn't talk to her at all. So finally, I'm like, okay, I got her number from Mark and I called her up and I'm like, out of the blue, I haven't even talked to her in like 30 years. I'm like, hey, what's going on? You know,
this might sound weird, but
I moved into a haunted house and you want to write a book? So I told her what had been going on. I said, I don't know what this is, Jenna. I said, this is a book. It's a movie. It's something. So to me, the book was what I just told you. The book was the true story. Like, that was my idea for the book. Just basically me moving into this house and experiencing the stuff and finding out about the crimes in the street. And so that was going to be the book. But she's like, I don't have enough here for a book. This is not a book. You know, this is maybe a book that explains the book later on, but this is not the book. So she's like, why don't we take this and turn it into a fictional horror novel? And I was like, that could work, actually. I'm like, so what we did is we incorporated the real hauntings of my home and the real crimes on the street into the book. But then, of course, you know, made it fiction and made it a lot scarier and went, you know, she went completely out of her comfort zone for this book, for sure, because she didn't even want to write this book. She laughed at me when I first pitched it to her because she hates scary things. She hates ghosts. She hates haunted things. Oh. She doesn't watch shows. She writes books about rock stars and romance and writes children's books. Yeah, she literally laughed. I was like, no, you know, started laughing. So when she hung up on me, it was playful, hanging up, because I think she knew I wasn't going to let it go. So I instantly start texting her and just hounding her. I'm like, you are going to write this book. We have to do this. So she finally was like, okay, fine, let's do it. We didn't really have a story, so we had to kind of come up with a lot of stuff. We had to come up with a backstory and all that kind of thing, you know. So, sure enough, I mean, it took 8 months start to finish, and it's a 318-page historical fiction horror novel.
And it's very much, if you like Stephen King, his style of horror novels, it's kind of like that.
Yeah, actually, it's been compared to The Shining. It's been compared to The Shining, The Conjuring, Haunting at Hill House, even Poltergeist. I love when people review, because I love to, you know, see what they think, you know. And there's a really disturbing part of the book that, like, I was like, Jen, I don't know if, like, you should leave that in there because my mom's going to read this. Even though I'm 53 years old.
And then you're like, Mom, it's fiction. Remember that part?
Know,
fiction,
it
Mom.
It was so gross. But then if I'm talking about this, then maybe other people will talk about it too. And, you know, I think maybe that's a good thing when you're writing horror. You need to come up with something a little bit different and a little bit unique. And so she knocked it out of the park, in my opinion. I was so happy with the way the book came out. I was absolutely thrilled. I mean, I think it's a scary book. It's a really dark book. She sold more copies of this book in 2 weeks than she sold combined all of her other books. So right out of the gate, we have a little momentum and interest. So now that she sees that the interest is in this story in the book, I think she's going to be a lot more open to, you know, writing the second one and the third one. And I actually have 5 or 6 books planned as we speak. So I just need Jen to come aboard with me to go on this journey. Hopefully she will. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. According to the mediums, she's going to do all of them. I hope that's right.
And I think it is interesting how you incorporated the true crime things in your neighborhood.
Yes.
And the real hauntings, like there's stuff about your dog in the book. And I thought that was really interesting how you were able, because as I'm reading it, you and I hadn't talked, so I wasn't sure what had happened, what hadn't. I don't know what, but now it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's what I love when I talk to people that are reading the book or have read the book, because they're like, oh, you know, that. We put a lot of real life stuff in the book. I mean, here's an example. In the book, I won't say too much, but somebody knocks on our window at like 3 a.m. That actually happened. There's a crazy guy in the neighborhood who was walking around and he was breaking into cars and smashing like people's car windows. And one morning we hear this knock on our window. And I just told my wife, I'm like, it's nothing, you know, whatever. Well, I go out the next day and I look out by our window and there was a bloody bandage and an empty coffee cup. And that was the guy. He knocked on our window. So we actually built a fence around our window now, so nobody can get access to our window directly.
Oh, God, yes.
I put that in the book, like little things like that that have happened in the neighborhood. And then some past experiences. The hospice ghost is based on the lady that was on hospice, but also based on like a lady that my sister was trapped with when she was a child. She actually got trapped in like a retirement home room with this really old lady who was senile. And it really freaked my sister out. It's like to this day, she still talks about it. So I wanted to incorporate that kind of thing, you know, in the book too. So I kind of used that as the character for the hospice ghost. So we took inspiration from truth, but then we also stretched it and made it into, you know, something completely scary and crazy. And because if I wrote the book, you know, about just the stuff that's happened in this house, you know, people would be like, oh, wow, a curtain pulled back. You know,
but I think with your neighborhood, it's very interesting when you look at the stories that have happened in your neighborhood and then other people having hauntings in their house.
Yeah.
Like, I think you could write a really interesting book that would be kind of the true side of, like, here's what's really happened.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of my this is my formula. Like, so I have a formula now, and it's a weird formula, but it seems to be the formula that we're going to use going forward, because, you know, in the book, we pick three crimes basically that were committed, three stories of those crimes that actually happened, and then fictionalize them, of course. The next book, I'm just going to go to the street behind me, because I already know that there have been multiple crimes and things happened back there. So I'm just going to move to the next street.
That's a great idea.
Instead of Hindley Avenue, I'm moving to Fairlawn Avenue next. So my character from one of the characters from the first book is going to go on, and then I will put those stories in the new book. And, you know, so it's like I try to incorporate the reality of the neighborhood with these books. So it's definitely something I think that's unique and hasn't been done before. To my knowledge, I don't know of anything that's been written like that before. So that's what, again, it excites me, because, you know, I am very creative and I've always been very creative. And Jen is so creative, and us working together, we just, you know, I think we wrote a really good book, really good, scary book. You know, I'm really proud of it. And it's great to have a book like published, you know, because I never would ever thought of I would have been a part of a book. I wrote comedy. So I wrote like sketch comedy. I wrote like parodies, commercials, things of that nature, one-liners, you know. But as far as sitting down to actually me having the skill set to write a book, no way. I couldn't do it. I just don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to do it. I needed somebody to see the vision of this project with me that I couldn't pay a ton of money, because I don't have money to pay, you know, these people. So Jen, I did pay her what I could, you know, and I said, look, you know, from here on out, you get 50% of whatever we make, you know, split right down the middle. Let's just do it that way. And she's like, no, you don't have to pay me. But I'm like, Jen, you know, no.
8 months of your life.
8 months of your life, you know, and most people would have charged thousands of dollars to write this book. And, you know, you wrote it for basically nothing. So I want to make sure that she's definitely, you know, at least part of this book for the rest of her life. Hopefully more, too, that we can share and eventually hopefully make a movie out of these two as well.
It would be really interesting, because as I'm reading it, I actually thought that this could be a movie, because
writes like a movie. Yeah, she writes like it's a movie, and it's great, because so whoever ends up writing the script and the screenplay shouldn't have too much of a difficult time transitioning the book to a screenplay. But I have to be involved. That's the problem. It's like I'm not like a control freak, but with this, I'm going to be a control freak, because if there is a film made, it has to be made the way I want it to be made. It's like, because certain things have to happen in this movie and certain facts have to be presented. And I don't want it to be like, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I don't want somebody just to totally ruin it.
Well, and a lot of times with horror movies and ghost movies, they kind of take it almost too far for me.
Yeah.
And it's like, the scary stuff is the knock at night, not blood coming from the walls. That doesn't happen.
You're exactly right. So that's the kind of movies I love too. So I was thinking like this movie would be like, I would make it like The Conjuring, only darker and without like the cheesy ghost hunter guys. I think people enjoy movies like that, you know? So yeah, we'll see. I mean, I pitched this book to a couple different places about the screenplay, and anybody wants, they went from $4,000 up to $20,000, and then that's no guarantee that anything's going to be happening with it anyway. So I'm like, yeah,
it's a lot of money.
I'm going to have to figure another way out around that one. So
now I found the book on Amazon, and I'm a Kindle Unlimited member, so I was able to download it for free.
Yep.
I'm assuming you can get it in other places where books are sold.
So Amazon is actually the only place right now. We're trying to get into bookstores. That's another thing when I'm talking about when you hit brick walls.
Oh yeah.
So, but I'm not going to quit trying. But yeah, so Amazon is the only place to get the book right now. You can get the paperback. The paperback's $15. The Kindle version is $3.17. We did it for March 17th in honor of Harold.
Oh, because I did see it said 3/17.
Yeah. And we released the book on March 17th as well.
I like that. I would never put that together.
Yeah. And then if you read the book, you'll notice the Alexa goes off a lot at 3:17 a.m.
So they can follow, like the Instagram page is Ghost Writer, WRITER.
Yes.
For Instagram. TikTok, is it the same?
I think it's that Ghost Writer House.
Ghost Writer House, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it is the same for TikTok too, yes. Yeah.
Ghost Writer House.
My son does all that stuff for me. He said all that stuff for me. I'm turning into my dad. My dad passed away in 2019, but I'm turning into my dad technologically now. And it's like, I used to be the guy that set all the DVD players up and stuff. And now here I am trying to figure out how to do TikTok. And I'm like, oh my God.
And you know, let's be real. It was harder to record something on a DVR than it is to post on TikTok. So.
Yeah, actually,
so
that's
true. You have the skill set.
You're right. Yeah, I just need to learn it and use it. And yeah, I'm learning all about TikTok. I'm learning about the language you can use on TikTok, the language you can't use on TikTok. Yeah. I'm learning all that stuff.
I want to say thank you for your time today. And please keep in touch, because I'd love to hear more about your house and things you discover, because there's going to be more things happening.
Yes.
And I'd love to hear more about progress of the next book. So yeah, come back anytime.
That would be great, Carol. I appreciate it. This is a lot of fun. I love doing this. I could talk about this stuff for hours, as you can tell. Like I said, I'm just very passionate, and I'm so happy that we ended up finding this home, because it literally changed my life. It gave me purpose. It gave me direction. Yeah. I feel like I know what I'm doing for the rest of my life. And this is it. This is what I'm going to be doing.
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be. And thanks to Harold Monroe for somehow arranging that. I don't know, again, how that all works, but wow, it's been a crazy experience so far. And I look forward to, again, working with a lot of other paranormal groups in the future to find out more information. I'm going to continue the research to find out more information. And again, I hope to write, you know, 5 more books. So, I appreciate it. And I'd love to come back to talk to you, Carol, anytime.
And that wraps up our conversation with Brian Bateman about his home, the Ghost Writer House. Follow them on TikTok and Instagram at Ghost Writer House. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, or you could sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.